Victoria Kirkland.
Ryan Lee.
Crystal Hall.
Andre.
All right, guys. This is Megan from 11 Capital. I just want to let everyone know that we have Stuart Solomon from Athos Capital on the phone today. What I'm going to do...
Hi,
Stuart, real quick, I'm just going to actually mute everyone because I think we have a little bit of background noise in the call. So just give me 1 second.
All right, guys, I want to thank everyone for logging on the call. We've had a great turnout. I'm really, really excited to introduce Stuart from Athos Capital. We've been working with them for some time. We actually have a deal closing with them very soon. It's been a pleasure working with you, Stuart. Honestly, I'm just going to let you go. You can explain anything you want about your company, your programs, and then, like I told you, we'll open it up to a quick Q&A.
Very good. Can everyone, can you hear me, Megan? You're going to be on the call with me.
I have everyone on mute just in case they're in an area where there may be some back noise, but when it's time for Q&A, I'll open it up so anyone can ask you questions.
Okay, great. So Athos Capital, Athos is spelled like Atlas, but there's no L. It's a T-H in there, so it's Athos Capital. And we're located in Calabasas, California. and we're actually the country's largest non-prime lender. We've been in business, the principals have been in business since the 1970s, and AFIS as its own company has been around since 2008. We have approximately $300 million in our portfolio lending capacity right now, and it's growing as we move forward, and it makes us very distinct and different from other firms who are forced to find money all the time. So we're a direct lender, we're a wholesale lender, and as far as myself and my own background, I've been in the financial arena since the late 1970s. I've been around the country and been in California for a number of years, and originally from the East Coast, from New York City and New Jersey, and went to school at Rutgers and Seton Hall University, having my MBA in finance. And so the type of lending that you're going to be keying in on are pretty much the word difficult is an easy understanding of, gee, I have a difficult loan. I have something that's hard to figure out how to do on a conforming basis. But this is our background. This is what we work with. We work with people who have had their loans fall out from conventional lenders. And the type of programs that we work on are going to be either income properties. Income properties are properties that people have as an investment, and they're receiving income. So it could be a 1-4 family residential property that's considered a business purpose program that we can work with. It could be a 5+ residential property, which is covered under the wording commercial residential. It could be mixed use. It could be somebody who has a retail or some type of store on the bottom of a building and office buildings or residential on the top, mixed use commercial building that way, or it could be straight commercial building. What we don't do at AFIS to talk about first and foremost is we don't do we're looking for types of loans where we're collateralizing the property, and the type of property we're looking towards is the type I just described. So when you're looking for something that's unique, that if a lender has to take over that collateral, if the loan really bellies up, what invariably is going to be something that's tougher for a lender to unload over time, it's going to be things like warehouses, land, unique things like a car dealership or a something that has a lot of pollution involved in it, like oil, gas stations, and or something really unique like a hotel. Who's going to buy a hotel? Another hotel here versus an office building, which anybody can lease the space in an office building. But when it comes to hotels, it's a very tough market. So when you're hearing and talking to people out there as far as the type of loans, you think about the collateral all the time that you're looking at. And the other side of the type of collateral that you're looking at is you're looking at, gee, what's unique about this particular property? How far is it, its marketability? How long is it going to take a lender who has to take it over to sell that property? Is it way off into the woods, or is it in a metro area or a major metro area? And most lenders are looking for major metropolitan areas or metropolitan areas where the commute to the work areas are not going to be going 30 miles outside of the major metro area. That doesn't necessarily mean you can't find a good loan for those particular people, but it does affect the type of loan that they can receive. So when we're talking about non-conventional, non-QM-type loans, we're talking about non-prime, and we categorize non-prime as either loans that are going to be put into our portfolio and hard money loans that are going to be in the 9, 10, 11% area, or the area of the nature of most of our business, which is the non-prime area. So I talked about a lot of different types of properties that you can work with. I started talking about income-producing property, investor property, but there's also primary residential property, your own homes, where you live. And those are consumer loans that are subject to TRID today. And so we have government rules and regulations that have to be followed. And in order for a consumer to qualify for a loan, they have to reach and meet certain standards. One of the most important is their ability to repay that loan. What distinguishes the programs at Athis, the two different types of programs, the income property program from the consumer residential, primary residential program, is consumer primary residential programs, you have to show your ability to repay that loan. How do you do that? You're showing it through your tax returns, your income. Your income has to be proven to a degree of hitting a debt-to-income ratio of a minimum of 43%. But if you have a strong credit rating and can prove certain areas of that, it could go up to 50 or even 55%, depending on the nature of the credit, nature of the individual borrower. And we're talking about refinancing and purchasing properties on all scenarios of all different types of loans that we have here. Now, stepping back to the income property, the investor properties, we are looking simply at a person's valuation, the valuation of that property. We're not looking at income. We're looking at the value of the property, the value of the collateral. And therefore, if they meet our standards of the quality of that building, we'll lend against it. If it happens to be in a rural area, we'll lend to them, but we'll lend to them on a hard money basis as opposed to a lower interest rate of subprime. Now, the range on our subprime rates for income-producing properties, investor properties, range from as low as 6.75% to as much as 9%. And I also already told you the range that we see on hard money, which can range anywhere from around 9% to around 11%. The difference between the two is most of the offerings that we have here at Athis Capital are par offerings, meaning the borrower is not paying any points to Athis. It's a par loan. Generally, what happens is the lower the credit rating, the higher the chance that they're going to be paying a premium of a little bit above half a point or a point, depending on the situation on subprime. And on hard money, the range is 1.875 to 2.875 points. If you want to round it, 2 points or 3 points. Three types of programs that we have that I mentioned to you are going to be the subprime consumer residential program. The range of the rates there are lower. The term is a 7-year ARM on a 30-year amortization. The rate sheets are available. Megan has copies of all the rate sheets to discuss and describe. The range of the credit scores go all the way down on consumer to sub 500 FICO scores. And why is it below? Because we save people, if they're in bankruptcy, if they've had foreclosures on their property, we can save the home under our D is in data, D grade, which is sub 500. Most of the loans that we see here are going to be in the 600 plus FICO score range, but we do deal with people in the sub 600 range as well. Now, when we're talking about income properties, the rate and terms are different. Income properties has a higher risk, and they are subject to prepayment penalties if the investor who is borrowing money wants to pay off that loan in a period shorter than 3 years. There's going to be a prepayment penalty. So the program, the rate and terms that I have on our income property loans are anywhere from a 3-year, 5-year, or 7-year ARM, but they all have 3-year prepayment penalties of a 5% penalty. If someone wants to pay that loan off within the first 3 years, they have to pay an extra 5% on the outstanding principal. Can they shorten that prepayment penalty? Yes, they can. They can go and ask me for a no prepayment loan, which I can do. I can do that under the hard money loan rates and give them a 2-year interest-only loan, and it will have no prepayment penalty. Or they could stay within the subprime area where there's no point charge at this point charge up front and work in and shorten to a 2-year or a 1-year prepayment penalty. And in order to do that, there are certain what we call bumps to the rate to enable them to shorten that program to a shorter period. And it's 75 basis points. So if I offer you a 7% 3-year ARM with a 3-year prepayment penalty, and you want to go to a 2-year prepayment penalty, then your start rate will be 7.75. If you want to go to a 1-year prepayment penalty, then it's going to go up another 75 basis points to 8.50. And that's then you'll be offering your client a 1-year prepayment penalty, a 3-year ARM on 30-year amortization. All these programs that I've mentioned to you have ways of lowering the rates or changing different variations to the programs. We will lend up to $10 million on our hard money program. We can lend up to $2 million on our income property investor program. And we can lend up to $3 million on our consumer lending programs. So the variations are depending upon the size of the loan. We generally don't like to lend less than $100,000, but we do offer people who are borrowing consumer lending the opportunity to borrow under $100,000, but we do not allow a high-cost loan in the consumer program. So if some variation of the interest rate or the fees end up pushing somebody into a high-cost loan, they won't be able to do the loan, and that loan will get kicked out. As far as the approval period, on a business purpose loan, once that submission is made to us, within 24 hours, we'll come back and give you our preliminary offering, our conditional loan approval, conditioning on certain provisions that are going to be made by the borrower, such as verification of his mortgage, copy of declaration of evidence of insurance. If it's a true commercial loan, then we're going to have to review their profit and loss statement. If it's a true commercial loan, a 5-plus residential, mixed-use commercial building, I'm going to need to look at the debt service that they have on this particular offer that we made to see if it at least covers 1.25 times as a ratio. And if it's 1.25 or more, then we can move forward with the loan and go to a closing. And fundings usually take between 18 to 28 days, depending on the type of loan and how quickly all the information is put together. The slowest part of the process is always, as you probably all already know, is the appraisal process. On commercial properties, it's usually around 3 weeks. And on consumer residential, primary residential properties, depending on where in the country, It could be anywhere from 5 days to 15 days. So I'm going to open up questions. If you have questions, please, I'll let Megan.
All right, guys. I have everyone unmuted. And Stuart, thank you so much for going over your programs. And just so everyone knows, because everyone got an email from me this morning, you know, Stuart went over their basically their subprime. I call it like your 30 AM bank alternate program. That's kind of what I call it. But that's the main program we're probably always going to have for you. You guys also have a really cool foreign national program that I let our reps know about, and I also sent them information about the hard money program that you talked about as well. So, guys, if anyone has any questions for Stuart, why don't you go ahead? And Stuart, sometimes people don't have questions or they're shy. But
yeah, either they're shy or I did a great job.
No, you did. You did. Well, the good thing about when you're explaining the program is, again, I send that email every morning, so they've had all day to go over this. And I know you're 3 hours behind me. But they've had all day to go over your programs. So I actually think I have a couple questions for you.
Sure, that'd be great.
One thing I ran into with you guys doing deals with you, most of the time, obviously on your main program, you know, where it's a 30-year and principal and interest, you know, you have your 3, 5, 7 year fixed options. It's typically just even so. Say the borrower that wants to pick the 7 year fixed,
mm-hmm.
Are they, and it's different with all different lenders, but are they just in a prepayment period still for the 5 years and it's the 5%, or is it 3? How would that work if they wanted to pick like a 7 year fix instead of a 3 or 5?
Right. The prepayment penalty is same whether you go with a 3 year fixed, a 5 year fixed, or a 7 year fixed ARM. It's always going to be a 3 year prepayment penalty, which you have the option to shorten by raising the rate.
If they wanted to go hard money, though, right? Or if
you could shorten it to a short.
Okay.
On our standard program, you can shorten it as short as a 1 year prepayment penalty.
Okay, but then obviously.
So the solution is. Yeah, I guess the solution really comes down to what is the borrower's game plan? What's their end plan going to be? If they're planning on and have a history of planning on holding that property, then the 3 year prepayment penalty isn't a big deal. And it's a moot point. It doesn't even affect their situation. But if someone who has a history of holding property and flipping it, then they may generally want to hold it for a 1 year prepayment penalty, or move over to the hard money program and do anything from a 6 month, a 1 year, a 2 year interest only, which won't have any prepayment penalties involved in it.
Yeah.
The shorter the term of the loan on hard money, the lower the rate is.
Yep. Okay, cool. Because I was looking over your hard money product sheet today when I put the email together for everyone on the phone. So like you were saying, too, like on hard money, you know, typically it's like a 1 to 2 year, you know, interest-only loan like you guys do. But I saw on your rate sheet you guys actually do for hard money, you have a 30 due in 5, which I have
That's
told
correct.
Some lenders, yeah, so which is very unique, guys, for everyone on the phone, because most lenders do not do that. It's a 1 to 2 year loan, interest-only loan. You're looking at really 12%, give or take, but somewhere around 12%. So I've come across a couple lenders, very, very few, that offer stuff like this. But can you explain to me, how do you guys work the hard money loan if it's 30 due in 5? Is that actually a hard money loan for 5 years and you're amortizing it over 30 years?
Yes, that's exactly right. So part of their principal is being paid down just as it would on any other loan on the same amortization schedule, a 30-year amortization schedule. And one of the things to point out is, you're dealing with a firm that has a huge, huge, huge amount of funding capacity. Most
mm-hmm.
hard money lenders on there are a single entity, a limited
yeah.
person who may have a few, just a couple million dollars to work with in his portfolio that he lends out. It may be a family office under $5 million, so they could be under the security laws and rules, so they can have a maximum amount of money that they work with of $5 million at any time. So we're dealing with our fund. Our fund is called the Rama Fund. If you look at our website, you'll see AFISCapital.com, a whole description. We even have some nice YouTube descriptions of the types of loans that we have. But I think I described them pretty well for everyone to understand. And you're all professionals. So if you have any questions on a loan that comes up in the future, you just ask Megan, and we can have a three-way conversation. So we're all on the same plate. One of the things I didn't discuss that Megan probably has on our list of questions is we also do foreign nationals. Foreign nationals can borrow money either as a income property or as a consumer primary residential property, but they need to have credit scores. So you say, well, if they're foreign nationals, how can they have credit scores in the United States? Well, they're here. They've got credit cards. They've established and even have a car loan. They're getting around the country and stuff. So usually when they're coming in from the outside, they're here on a visit and they're looking for temporary housing, income property that they may have created, or they're establishing a residential address too. So both those are available. Now, the term that's used predominantly in the industry for income property that I described, where we're only looking at the valuation of the collateral, it's called stated income loans, where their income is just stated. It's not expressed on the 1003 in any fashion. There's no income on page 2 shown. There's no rental income shown on page 3 under their schedule of real estate owned. Under schedule of real estate owned, you'll put down their properties that they own, their mortgage, their taxes and insurance, but you will not put any income information anywhere. And that's a stated income, income property, business, residential, or commercial.
Yeah, I talk to the reps about that a lot. But just real quick, I had a couple questions for you. So with the foreign nationals, AFIS, you guys don't do any loans that are owner-occupied, do you? Like, I mean, if someone's going to
I just worked on one right now. No,
yeah.
Right before you called me, I was working on an owner-occupied foreign national loan.
Okay.
And
so
why?
Yeah,
we do. And it's on the residential rate sheet. You'll see it on the bottom left, foreign national. What we do is we charge a premium on the interest rate and a point charge of 0.75%.
Okay. So we won't be able to send you any of those unless we do have a couple of residential mortgage brokers actually that are with us, unless they're licensed in that state, you know, because we're not licensed residential mortgage brokers, so we don't hold that, you know, NMLS. But, you know, I guess if their investment property is purely if it's a 1-4 unit investment, that's what you're going to get from us. You know, 1-4 investment or commercial, of course, investment.
Right.
We might be able to get you an owner occupied one, but it's interesting you'll do that for foreign nationals. A lot of the times, I just want you to know too, and maybe we can elaborate on this. We do run across a lot of foreign nationals that will always tell us they don't have credit, and I hear where you're coming from. You know, they have to have established something somehow. So what we'll typically do, we have them pull their credit themselves. We use a website that's very easy to use, and it only costs the borrower $1. Credit total check or total check credit, one of those. But we just have them pull it regardless to prove that they don't have any open credit lines or anything. If you do get a foreign national that literally does not, unfortunately, see, sometimes a lot of certain individuals who are foreign nationals, their culture is very accustomed to using a lot of cash. And sometimes they don't have actually any credit. So how would you guys handle them, not for an owner-occupied property, but for a pure investment property?
If this was 2015, I would have had an easy answer for you that we give them the grade C, as in boy, But in 2016, we removed the opportunity for people who do not have credit.
Okay.
We removed that opportunity, so we no longer have that opportunity. The secondary markets, the securitization markets, have become to the point where it's very difficult to provide packages of loans for them to purchase and create the liquidity that is continuously needed in the mortgage business. And so because of that, the only place that foreign national loans can be held in that regard is called portfolio lending, hard money lending.
Mm-hmm.
But even so, we're not doing that anymore. In that regard, we've changed our guidelines in 2016. So, unfortunately, the answer is no. You need a FICO score.
Guys, if you're in any area where there is noise, if you don't mind muting your phone, just in case any of the other IEPs want to ask some questions, thank you so much. But, Stuart, thank you so much for that. Yeah, I had an old flyer from you guys that was like, no FICO, you know, no social security number, no credit, no citizenship, no green card, like all those things that used to have on it. I was like, no
right.
way. No way they're really
right.
still doing this.
yeah. So about 15 minutes ago, right at the start of the call, I emailed you the new rate sheets and the new submission forms that are used as of August the 16th at Athens Capital. So
yeah.
You can open those up, and when you need to use them, they're right there for you. And I'll update you as things change.
Yeah, I have them. So I'm going to actually send a new email out to everyone. But, yeah, honestly, Stuart, that's really probably all the only questions I have for you. I'm glad you guys still consider foreign nationals. We don't get many of them, but now we know if we do, they need to have established credit here. Is there anything else we should look at for if we do get a – obviously, just so everyone on the phone knows – I'm going to assume for you to do a foreign national loan, I'm probably sure I'm 100% correct. The foreign national obviously has to live in the United States. I get asked that question all the time.
No,
they don't?
No. Yeah, they do not, no.
They don't have to physically live?
The majority of them own a house in their foreign country. Now, do we have a way of going through a title company and truly knowing if they own the house in the foreign country? No, we don't. But
yeah.
The question is asked, do you own a house? And it's on the submission form. You'll see on our submission forms. And on the 1003, you have to put an address down of what that house residential has house address is. And it will also be backed up invariably by a foreign bank account showing their home address on it. Too,
mm-hmm.
So
they don't actually physically have to, obviously they're not a U.S. citizen, but the foreign national doesn't physically have to, I guess you're saying they just don't have to own a home here. What if they don't live here? Like, what if they only are here like a couple months out of the year and they live in their country the majority of the time?
They're going to buy an income property over here. They'll create a stated income loan. No income verification. One of the most recent changes that has come about in lending is that it has become very difficult for an individual who is a renter rather than a homeowner
to
get involved in income property. I mean, yeah, if you're trying to make as much money as you can and you don't want to manage and own a residential property that you live in because it's going to cost you more than the rent would be on a small apartment, and you've got all this cash to keep buying income properties out there, condos or single-family homes or et cetera, you're going to try to make the most out of it. But lenders, they want people to have their a strong base. They want them to have a residential address, a residential property that they own, that they live in, for lending. So what happens is, who's going to make that loan? That paper is not going to be able to be securitized, so it has to be a portfolio loan. So hard money loan. So a hard money loan will be made to a person who's a renter who's buying investment property. And that goes, that's pretty universal today. It's a very, very theme. So when someone comes into you and says, oh, yeah, here's my home address, I rent there, then the answer is, okay, well, I'm going to end up having to show this person a hard money loan, period.
Yeah,
as opposed to the subprime one.
Most lenders, lenders always get very squirrely, guys, when if someone rents and I'm dealing with a situation like this right now, if someone rents a property or doesn't own a home and they are purchasing or refinancing a 1-to-4-unit investment property, lenders always get very scared for some reason that that person may move in there or something. A lot of times that kills the deal with a lot of the lenders. But, Stuart, just real quick on the
Go ahead. Real quick before you step off that. Yeah, hey, this is Andre. Just real quick on that renter idea. Is the value of the house relevant or is it just that they own a house?
No, it's no relevancy at all. The only relevancy is the subject property that I'm lending against.
Right, but I'm saying as far as the lenders themselves, you said they don't like to lend to people that are renters. If they own a small house in their city, it doesn't matter if it's a small house or a big house, as long as they own a house. So they have like
correct.
Roots, is that kind of the idea they're looking for? They want to know they're not going anywhere, so to speak.
Yeah, they want to know because what happens if the person moves into that rental property and occupies it, it's a form of fraud, and the loan that they created with the lender can be called in right away if it could be called in.
Understood.
Yeah,
you'll
run into that a lot, Andre. Whenever someone is looking to refinance or purchase a 1-to-4-unit, so single family residence, 2-unit, 3-unit, 4-unit, and they don't personally own a home themselves, it always becomes a very squirrely situation. There's certain lenders that will do it. There's certain lenders that won't.
Is that the case on multifamily, like 20 or 50 unit? Or is it just usually on the smaller deals? Stuart, or either way. Hello?
I don't hear anyone.
Sorry,
oh,
guys. The phone cut out for a little bit. Could everyone hear what Stuart was saying?
No, I couldn't.
No.
Stuart, I'm sorry about that. Can you just repeat that last sentence?
Sure. Let's say I'm an individual who wants to own a home. And I don't have the income to prove to the bank that I can meet the minimum ability to repay the debt-to-income ratio of 43%. What people try to do is they go and say, hey, I'm buying an investment property. I don't have to show my income. I just have to show the subject property and the value of that subject property, and the lender will loan to me without me proving my income. That's a form of fraud. Everyone gets that, right? So they try to do a non-owner-occupied loan when and then they move into that property. Even signing documentation saying, a letter of explanation saying, I'm never going to move into this property. There's always a chance that they'll do that, though. And, you know, of course you can't prevent it, but they have to document that they're not going to do that.
Yeah, so I guess, Stuart, where you guys are coming from is you guys are afraid that, you know, see, guys, on residential mortgages, I know none of us really here on the phone are licensed residential mortgage brokers. We may have one or two. But you have to prove to the bank that you can service that loan through, you know, W-2s, tax returns, whatever you're doing. Or I guess, Stuart, you're saying that, you know, you guys are afraid that if the borrower doesn't have the income to service that loan, they'll try to come over and get a stated commercial loan.
Right.
And then do that because they don't have to prove their income and then move into that property when you guys lent on it as an investment property. Not a residential loan, we may be actually breaking mortgage laws by doing that, correct?
Right, and you're talking about a security. You're talking about a mortgage debenture. And that debenture could be floating around in New York to California to Chicago. Who knows who picked it up over the life of that loan? During the life of that loan, it's been discovered that that person moved into that property, and it's a they're in there not legally against the against what the loan states. It's a non-owner occupied loan occupied by the owner. It's called clawback. All of a sudden, that loan could go all the way back to Athos Capital as a bad loan, and we have to make good on taking care of the people who ended up buying that loan along the life of the loan time period, and it's not good. So everyone tries to be as preventive as possible so that no fraud is anticipated and can happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's the same thing with appraisals. You have to work with good appraisers out there to make sure the appraisal is an honorable appraisal. There's a lot of things that have to be checked, and that's why loans take they don't happen in 5 or 10 days. You have to be very careful. All the paperwork is clear and appropriate.
Yeah.
There's one other thing I forgot to mention. On a consumer loan,
mm-hmm.
you may have a duplex or triplex or fourplex where the owner lives in one of those units.
Mm-hmm.
They can do a consumer residential loan, which has lower interest rates. They could do it.
Yeah.
All they have to do is prove that they have the ability to repay through their income sources.
But we would.
They don't
we
have
would
to do a business loan.
Yeah, that would be literally like a residential loan, though, that we'd have to submit to you.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
So we would just need to make sure if we did that, we submitted it through a residential mortgage broker that we have on our team that, of course, is licensed in that state. So, for the most part. None of the principals here, like me, I'm not a residential mortgage broker, which everyone knows. But if we had one, we could do that, and then that person would be the only person, of course, that could make the fee on that. But if the IEP can make that fee, that'd be great. But most of what you're going to get from us, everything you're going to get from us, basically, if it's a 1-4 unit, it has to be non-owner occupied. And just so you know, it's always the first question I harp on a borrower. You know,
but it could also be commercial. Could be true commercial office buildings
Most of the stuff that we do is actually pure commercial, so 5+ or commercial, or the doctor's office me and you are doing right now, you know, pure commercial property.
Right.
But we do get a lot of the 1-4 unit investment properties, and the first question I always ask them up front is, you're purely not going to live there, right? That's not what are your intentions with the property? So I always kind of hit them with that up front. But Stuart, I just want to thank you so much for explaining your program, taking your time with us today and everything. Just wanted to ask everyone on the call one last time, if anyone has any questions about the programs that Stuart addressed to us, or Stuart, if there's anything else you wanted to add at all.
Yes, I had a quick question.
Sure, go ahead. Yes.
Can you hear me? Okay, sorry.
Yes.
With regard to the hard money, do you provide any funding for specifically for fix and flip for the actual rehab costs? Okay. All right. So is that a specific amount with regards to the ARV, or how would that work?
We're doing it against purchase price as opposed to ARV.
Okay.
You're going to be there has to be skin in the game, as they say. We want to see, you're going to want to see 35%, 40%, 45% investment by person who's starting the project. And they have to have a history, a building history. So they can't be just a fly-by-night type person. There's one important thing I wanted to say to everyone on the call is there are no silly questions. Ask me anything. Ask Megan anything, and we will work and provide a solution for any situation that you have,
Thanks, Stuart. So basically, guys, what more Athos Capital does is just bridge loans. If someone wants to rehab the property, that's fine, but those rehab funds are going to have to come directly from the borrower. They'll do a certain LTV, a 65% LTV possibly on the purchase of that property. But they're not going to provide the rehab fund. So it's definitely a hard money bridge loan, but it's not a true rehab loan. We spoke to ABL last week, asset-based lending. They're a true rehab lender. They just structure their loans differently.
So
yeah, I'd say a less than, way less than 5% of our loans are going to be rehab loans anyway. So the most activity is going to be, as you said, in the 1-4 income property borrowers, people who have more than 4 properties, that they can't go conventional because of the number of properties that they have, and for various other reasons as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we go over that a lot. Guys, does anyone have any more questions for Stuart? So basically, just to go down, I mean, they do. There are 30-year AM stated that we always talk about. Those are our favorite loans here. Just so you know, Stuart, that's probably the most. This is definitely going to be the biggest type of loan we're going to send them, I should say, for either 1-4 units or commercial. We can, if a borrower needs a bridge loan, though, Assets just a pure bridge loan. They don't need any rehab money. Assets actually has very great rates. Most bridge lenders are really at a 12%, sometimes 12 to 14% interest only, and AFIS actually does start at around an 8%. I think you said, David, I'm looking at your hard money sheet here. Now, that interest rate is going to be dependent on their LTV and what type of leverage they want, but it looks like they're really a 8 to 11% here, which is very good hard money terms. And then you guys have that foreign national program. You know, so those are really your main three programs, but we're probably always going to be your 30-year AM for someone that already has a property income producing and wants to buy an investment or of course, refinance.
Right, and that's our bread and butter. About 80% of our lending is in the 1-4 unit stated income properties.
All right. So one last time, guys, does anyone have any other questions for Stuart and his program?
No, with Brett.
Stuart, you did say one really interesting thing, which is I just wanted to highlight, and then we'll let you go. I know you got to get back to work. One thing you said was you guys are a par lender, which I have noticed on certain term sheets I've gotten from you guys. So when you're saying that, basically you're saying you're not charging the borrower any origination fee or anything?
When I say that, it means that, yes, the AFIS is not charging an origination fee. You can add an origination fee, which you'll receive through escrow at closing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all borrower paid. So if you look at the sheets, you'll see the majority of our loans say par, meaning AFIS is not adding an additional origination fee that goes only to AFIS.
Okay. That's pretty unique because, you know, most stated lenders still will charge at least a point or something because, you know, that they need to make money too, you know. So that's very unique. So, all right. Well, I just wanted to thank you so much for your time and going over your programs with us. I really should be able to answer any questions I have about your program. But, of course, if there's something I don't, you know, I'll be calling you.
Great.
Yeah. So,
yeah, I look forward to hearing more from 11 Capital.
I know.
We've had a great history already, so thank you again.
I know. And honestly, we recently got linked up with you guys, which, I mean, probably about 6 months ago, but I'm really, really glad we did. And me and we're working on a very, very, very interesting deal in Oregon right now, which has a very long backstory to it, me and Carlos. But just so you guys know, we got a loan approved, our first approval with Asus today, and actually we should have the appraisal with you guys very soon. So it's very interesting. And we're very,
fantastic.
Very excited about it. So, Stuart, again, just want to thank you so much for the call. We're going to let you go. But, guys, if anyone has any questions, you can shoot me an email. And, again, Stuart, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Great. Thank you all. Take care.
Have a great day. Bye.